So, all right. Just getting started here. Let's go through how you ended up at this place, how you ended up in front of the camera with me today, and anything else you want to tell us
Yeah,
about your
sure.
journey.
So my name is Tim Mills. My spiritual name is Simran Randeep Singh. And I've been a relatively newcomer to Kundalini Yoga. I've been doing Kundalini Yoga probably about 7 years now, on and off. But I've been a lifelong person who's done yoga, but usually yoga, the kind of like when you go to a gym type of yoga, the vinyasa, the flow type of yoga, just to kind of keep myself in shape, keep myself flexible, those type of things. So probably about 5 years ago, there's an event that happened to me, Gary, and I know I've talked about this before with you. I'm a deep runner. I like to run long distances, more so in my younger days than I do now. However, about 5 years ago, one of my friends who gave me some beautiful music, a lot of Kundalini music, a lot of chants, a lot of deep meditative type music, and most of it was from Kundalini yoga artists, which in the Kundalini tradition, singing and chanting is core to how we live our yogic life. So about 5 years ago, someone gave me this music, and I loved to run with it. One time I was preparing for a really long race. I was trying to do 30 miles, and I just couldn't get over maybe 15, 20 miles just in my training. So I've been listening to this music, and one time I went out a long run, and no kidding, I went into a trance from I believe it was the music. And I woke up about maybe 30 minutes later, probably about a mile and a half later. I kind of came out of it. And now I thought that was kind of a cool experience, but I kind of wanted to know what actually happened to me. And I'm a very big lover of Kundalini music now. So that's where I came to the ashram. Someone told me about the ashram who here in Milis, the Guru Ram Das ashram. And I came over and talked to the director at the time. And I said, I told her what happened to me. And without batting an eyelash, she said, "Yeah, Tim, glad you came over. You're always more than welcome." So what we said, what happened to you was the Shabad Guru. Shabad Guru, from the sound, kind of captured your heart. So I was kind of taken aback, because the way she addressed it was, kind of matter of fact, like, "Yeah, we all, this happens to a lot of us, so we know how it goes." So that deeply interested me to kind of take up Kundalini yoga here at the Guru Ram Das ashram. Then when I get into it, I became a real proponent, an active participant in Kundalini yoga, and I began my teacher training, level one teacher training here at the ashram, probably about 3 years ago. I think it was the 2019 class. And during that time, I also have had maybe two or three more of those, what we call those Kundalini awakening, or kind of like raising your Kundalini. Whatever they call it, it makes a deep impression upon me. So ever since then, I've been an active member here at the ashram, and I'm also a teacher here at the ashram. And I try to evangelize my Kundalini yoga experience, because for me, it's a unique story. Me and me, kind of an older gentleman, and you don't see too many women in yoga as a general practice, and probably even less older men who go pursue to become teachers in Kundalini yoga. So ever since then, I've been working here at the ashram doing mostly volunteer work, what we call sevadas. I try to help them with the technology. I teach classes here. And then I just generally help any way I possibly can. So it's kind of a unique story, but it's a story that has changed my life, changed my insight on the importance of Kundalini yoga, and also what's kind of got going on within yourself that you would be captured to be captured in that enthrall of the moment. And what are those subtle bodies, those subtle energies that are working through our life every single day? So that's in a nutshell, that's kind of my story, how I ended up here.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What changed for you that day?
What changed for me today? Obviously, the event itself kind of put me into a deep meditation of what is life all about? I know this is going to sound like a crazy take, but it was the take that had it on me. In my life, especially in my adult life, I've been very successful, actually. I've been in corporate America. I was in the military for 27 years, and retired colonel, United States Air Force, and worked as a consultant, and then also have worked in corporate America. So it gave me pause, Gary, to tell you the truth. It gave me pause of what is this life all about, and how is something as simple as listening to music while you're running and not knowing anything about the lineage itself, and then something grabs you and starts talking to your heart and says, this is, maybe a way that you should think about leading your life. So that changed me at that moment. It gave me, to be honest with you, a more direction, a little bit more focus on let's think about other people versus yourself. And that's why I'm a big proponent of volunteer. So everything I do here is all volunteer work. And I try to help out folks as much as I can. Now, since that time, I not only teach here, I teach at a couple of universities. I teach yoga at the university, those two universities as well. And I kind of notice when I'm working with the younger generation that they're seeking this kind of guidance or this kind of insight into how they can change their own life. So maybe live a better life or a more focused on the team, or what we would call the sangha, focus on what are the true treasures, the talents, the skills that we have, that not only we use to enrich ourselves, but how can we use those beautiful gifts that we've been given to help other folks, right? Because there's always someone out there. So that type of experience gave me that kind of lifestyle, that kind of focus. And when I teach, even Kundalini yoga, when I teach Kundalini yoga, I try to come forward with the heart center, try to be more heart-centered. My big focus when I usually teach is on having folks to think about and how to expand or grow compassion for others. But also, I more recently have taken upon myself to help teach folks, from what I know, is to how to have self-compassion, right? A lot of folks, they put themselves down or put too much pressure on themselves. And from my perspective, you can't really love or help other people with true compassion unless you have that compassion for yourself and that willingness to forgive yourself. So those are some of the basis for what I teach Kundalini Yoga right now.
Mm. Yeah, amen. You gotta love yourself first.
Yeah.
So it seems like your heart chakra opened that day. Like there's something that just said, wait a second, it's not all about me.
Yeah. I would say at the time, I didn't know anything about chakras. Mm-hmm. I mean, I read about it. I didn't know anything about chakras, those energy centers. Let me describe the event a little bit more. It was, it was somewhat of a trance where a lot of things I can't remember, but I was still conscious. I wasn't unconscious. And then to your point, Gary, there was a sense of well-being, right? And then also a clear, very clear voice. No one was talking to me, but I heard this voice in my head that said, pretty much help others, wow. Help others, focus on others, not yourself. So that kind of what happened to me that day. And it's very cool. It was, I can be honest with you, so we're on camera. It was nerve-rattling, right? And I talked to a bunch of different folks, not only the spiritual guidance here, but other folks. I want to make sure there was nothing wrong with me physically or mentally or emotionally, all those type of things. And there was nothing that they could find, anyways. And so I take it upon myself that this was a spiritual awakening, and I just have to accept it now. Tim, being an educator, also born and brought up to be a rationalist, right? I have a good science background, so I want to make sure that what we're doing has meaning or can be somewhat proven. And this kind of rattled me a little bit that it's hard to kind of like measure those type of experiences that you have, and sometimes you just got to open up your heart and say, whatever it is, I just accept it, I accept that message and do the best I can going forward.
Yeah, exactly. Like spiritual experiences there's no science that could measure that. It's all direct experience. It's interesting though, because I've talked to a lot of other people about this, and even though people have different practices and techniques in order to get to that spiritual awakening, they all have this. They're all on the same wavelength of changing the viewpoint, perspective of life, like changing how they see themselves and how they see themselves in the world, and what they do then, thus after the whole event or whatever happened or whatever they did to get to that, right? Yeah. And it's that's what gets me. It's that. It's almost like a stroke of grace for people sometimes, and it just happens. And then at that point, there's no going back, right? You couldn't go back to the old Tim.
No, right? I couldn't. No, and to amplify what you said, I can't go back, but even more importantly, I don't want to. Right? It's not that like, geez.
Yeah.
Yeah, this isn't for me, but this happened to me. It's like, no, I have... In a strange way, after that event, when I got involved here with the ashram, it was no doubt whatsoever, no doubt that this was what I was meant to do. So I don't even actually think about it. I go back type of idea.
Yeah.
So, but anyways, very cool, very cool.
Now, really before, cool point. Were you religious/spiritual in any way, or were you just like a pragmatic rationalist?
Yeah, no, I was. I'd probably say I was spiritual in the fact that I always have believed in love and compassion and helping others. And I come from a very large family, mostly Irish Bostonians, so to speak. So we were born and raised Catholic, and I still consider myself a Christian and a Catholic. One of the cool things I learned about Kundalini Yoga, and actually working with some of my Sikhi friends. Is they're more than embracing whatever you want to believe in. Whatever you believe in, you're always more than welcome. Our true goal is to help and love each other, and we're all on the same path. But I've always been a little bit spiritual, but not devout, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like how you said the true goal is to help and love each other. It really is that simple.
Yeah,
when you come to that realization, it's like. For me, it didn't happen, when I was a kid, and it didn't happen when you were a kid either, even though we're different ages. But I lived my life to a certain point when it happened to me. I'm like, what? It's been hidden in plain sight the whole time. Like, how did I not see this? How did I not feel that this is really how life should be lived, and, in service to others and in service to yourself as well. And, the whole just be a good person kind of vibe. And, yeah, there's no going back for me either. There's no way that I could really go back into the matrix, I guess you could say. there's no way. Now that I see that love is the way, I know that sounds corny and cliche, but if you know, that is the truth of why we're here as a human being, and that's what it really means to be a human being, to just be there for other human beings. Mm-hmm. That's the truth. And we overcomplicate it, man. It's so simple. Like, we just have to, in our own way, in our own circumstance, whatever we're good at, you're good at your stuff, I'm good at my stuff, and everybody who's watching this is good at their own stuff, but we're all servants, and we're all servants to each other. And that's the point of being a human being, is whatever you're good at, you serve in your own way for the betterment of the entire world, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that's the gist of it, man. That's, I think, at least. I think once you get on that wavelength, you can see that, obviously, yes, this is where we're supposed to be. This is how we're supposed to be. And we're supposed to build a better world from here.
Beautiful, Gary. That was well said. Thank you very much.
Right.
And to hitchhike on what were you just saying. So, yeah, it's not cliche. I'll throw another cliche out there. Is for me, and I think most of the folks that I talk about, having that heart center and helping, being compassionate, doing the best you can, like Gary, what you were saying, leveraging the skills, your gifts, your competencies that you have. I mean, whomever the creator of the universe gave you those gifts, that, not to put in your back pocket and say, hey, look how many gifts I have in my back pocket. Mm. How can I make more money, or how can I get a better car, all that kind of neat stuff. Mm-hmm. But what's cliche is after I became more open, more helping others, more compassionate, teaching compassion, and then just doing volunteer work. And no, it sounds cliche. First of all, it's not arduous. And second, it is very true, at least from my perspective, I get a lot more out of it than other folks. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's how I live that spirituality, that brand new gift that the creator gave to me.
Yep.
And it's just like, If I can help someone, then that's a great day. And yeah. That's how I look at it.
It's a win-win for for yourself and whoever you're helping.
Perfect.
Right?
Perfect. I love
that's
it.
That's the gist, because our world, we're brought up, right, on happiness is in the material, it's in the car, it's in the money, mm-hmm. it's in the great vacations. This doesn't mean you can't have that stuff, obviously, but that's not the end point. That's not where you're gonna find happiness. That's not where you're gonna find peace. Right? And I think that's what yoga is all about. I think it's about finding happiness. To really put it simply, obviously, it's mm-hmm. a lot more complicated than that. But putting it very simply, it's being able to find happiness as a human being. And that's how we find it, essentially, is that we help others. Because we all know how good it feels to help others, right? To give, to truly give, and to without asking for anything in return, and to truly give. For me, at least, that feels really good. And I can't always do it. I'm not like the greatest charitable. I'm not the greatest... What's the word when somebody donates a lot?
A philanthropist.
Yeah, philanthropist. Yeah. I'm not the greatest philanthropist in the world, but at least I try to put myself on that wavelength in whatever way possible, and more than just money. Maybe mm-hmm. if it's even just saying hi to somebody or having like a 5-minute conversation with somebody. Just little things like that. They add up. They add up for, you know, the karma of the world, the good karma, and they add up for yourself. You know, they add up just to create a better well-being for yourself. It's a beautiful thing. I mean, would you say that's what yoga is to you?
Yeah, I would say what yoga means to me. No, I've done a lot of studying on what yoga is or what the.
Yeah, how would you define it to somebody that has no idea? They think it's just like stretching and sweating.
Yeah, exactly. That's the American, although the Western purview of it. So if you do the history of it, yoga, you know, they'll tell you that the root is, you know, comes from yug, which means to join, to bring together. Mm-hmm. And then most folks would say what they're talking about is metaphorically is like bringing yourself, your Atman, your true self with the the universe, the creator, the Pada Atman up there. So that's what yoga is like historically. Now, I would always also say, and I've kind of learned to say this, is yoga is what it means to you, right? Mm. It should be. But if it allows you that focus, whatever lineage that you believe in, if it allows you that focus to become more one with yourself and to kind of understand that we are actually all one, we're all connected. Mm-hmm. You spoke about karma. You know, the whole idea of what we do affects everyone in the world and will affect our soul after we leave. Very, very big aspect of yoga from my standpoint. What you do, how you do it, and it kind of defines you as a human, not only as a human, but as your spiritual person itself. So yoga to me, I'm currently a student of yoga, taking a bunch of courses to learn more lineages. Not only from the Sikh perspective, what we learn here in Kundalini Yoga, but Bhakti Yoga, the yoga of devotion, and Patanjali's Ashtanga Yoga. But to your point, if you get a chance to study it, even if most folks maybe understand Ashtanga or Patanjali's 8 limbs of yoga. And originally, there was never that much actually talked about asanas, which is what we call exercises or postures. It was always how to take care of you, how to be the best person you can be, how to help other folks, you know, the yamas, the niyamas, you know, give you some techniques on how to breathe, to comfort yourself, the pranayamas. And then asanas, which in Sanskrit actually kind of means to sit down. So it was all about sitting down. Mm-hmm. And then how do you concentrate and achieve that those fine subtle bodies for meditation, and that was kind of like the true original yoga. So that's about all that I know. But to your point, yoga in the West is pretty much kind of like going to the gym, taking a Pilates class, you know, with maybe an Om thrown in here and there type of thing, mm-hmm. which is fine. I love yoga for the exercises as well. But a lot of the things that what me and Gary were talking about, getting more in tune with yourself and how yourself is really put on this earth to help others, right? And if you take that perspective, also we're here to help others. Maybe from the perspective that if you were all interconnected, you're really just helping yourself. And if you want to flip the coin, you know, we're just here to help each other, you know, kind of get across the walk yourself home, as Ram Dass would say, to walk each other home. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to hitchhike on one thing, because you mentioned chakras. So after I learned the different chakras, which are kind of like the energy centers in your body, and each chakra represents, you know, a specific force or a skill set or kind of a vibration. It represents a lot of different things. So when I teach, I try to teach at least go through every single one of the chakras with my students. And from the understanding of, based on what we were just talking about, how do we help each other, you know? So I always try to end like, I wish everyone peace at the crown chakra. I wish everyone that has wisdom, how to live their life, how to help others, how to use your skills, all those type of things. Your throat chakra, to always speak the truth, you know, as best as you can. But we control what we say to each other. We can control that. Sometimes you can't control your thoughts, but you can control how you talk to folks. How do you encourage folks? How do you uplift folks? That you can do that. The next chakra, your anahata, your heart. You know, to have love and compassion for everybody and have the willpower. The lower chakras, security, and keep yourself grounded. Even if you maybe don't understand the chakras as energy centers, or maybe you even don't know what they are, just kind of keeping that focus in mind of all those different qualities and energies are really here for us to kind of make ourselves better so we can help other folks. So it's very intuitive once you start thinking about it.
Yeah. The process of alignment. Like, you're literally aligning your body through yoga, and then you align your how you act in the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know? And that has changed me. You know, I grew up with a lot of bad habits, or maybe just the nature of my generation as well.
I think we all have.
But even I think most of the vast majority of us have. But even something as simple, and I try to pass this on to my kids, right? You can be stressed out all day long, and you might want to, you know, punch someone in the nose, and that's just all part of being human. But even if it's just something simple as today, I can control what I say and how I say it. Mm-hmm. Just as something as simple as that. Mm-hmm. If you can just maybe, like, well, what we used to call in the old days, if you can just bite your tongue when you want to yell and scream at someone. Or if you see someone who's having a high stress day, if they just say, hey, what a beautiful day. I hope you're doing well. Is there anything I can do to help? You don't know the impact that has on folks, especially folks who might be suffering.
Yeah.
Or folks that might have trauma or actually need that piece of love. Mm-hmm. And you were there to, you know, it's a small piece, but you gave them a kind of that piece of love, which is beautiful.
Yeah. It's how we respond and how we act.
Yeah,
that's where all the things that we do in the yoga class really comes to light, is in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do all this practice in class so that we know how to respond consciously when we have these situations that we don't quite expect. You know, it makes it easier to deal with the unexpected events of life.
Mm-hmm.
And then deal with it in a, I guess, sattvic way, where you can not create bad karma for others and yourself,
right?
And that's how we create the better world.
And it's hard. It's like anything. It's hard, but you can control it, or you can cultivate over time to be better.
Yeah.
And I think that's more of a goal that we should give folks, right? It's not like, you know, one day you wake up and you say, hey, I'm a yogi, so now I'm never going to do anything bad again, right? Mm-hmm. And that's fine, because that's, once again, that's part of being human. But if you can do that constant striving, right? Even telling yourself, yeah, it wasn't all that hot today. I screamed and yelled at X, Y, Z. Tomorrow, I won't do that, right? Mm-hmm. Or maybe today I'll meditate on how I can be a better person. Maybe meditate on how I can love myself a little bit more. Or maybe meditate on what's a simple thing that I can do today just to help one person, right? Mm-hmm. Even if it's just the stare in their eyes, and then, you know, with a smile. And that's a huge piece of communication that you're giving to people.
Yeah, seriously.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, you have no idea.
I like what you said, too, because Rome wasn't built in a day.
Yeah.
You know, it does take time, a lot of time for sure.
It takes commitment. Time and commitment.
Discipline, commitment. Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that brought me to, I really liked about yoga, is it wasn't just one For me, anyways, it wasn't just one stop. It was like, you know, fantastic. You're officially a yogi. You know, go out and you're all done. You know, here's your graduation papers for being a yogi. It's a lifelong commitment.
And maybe multiple lifelong.
Yeah, there you go. Make sure you kind of hoard all those commas in this life so you can spend them in the next life. That's beautiful. Yeah. I like that.
That's what they say. Who knows? I mean, yeah, it gives me a sense of purpose, you know?
Very good.
Purpose than more than just accumulating wealth or status. A purpose of like, almost like this life is a video game. I'm trying to upgrade my character, you know?
I love that.
But it's not like upgrading in like a superficial way. It's like becoming better, almost becoming like the next level, the next, you know, the Superman, the Mega Man.
Yeah.
You know?
In traditional yoga, they'll teach you about attachments, right? And maybe one of our goals is to kind of separate ourselves from all those attachments. And, you know, a lot here in the Western world, kind of to your point, the attachments are, if I make more money, I'm a better person, or if I have a better car, I'm better than everyone else, or, you know, if I have, you know, have more food, all those type of things. So it's always that constantly get, and you can't put it all in your back pocket, right? And obviously we have to live. And that's one of the beautiful things about Kundalini Yoga and Sikhism, is they believe what they call the householder, right? We're not yogis that go and sit in the forest and contemplate, which is cool if you have time to do that. This is yoga for people who have a regular life, who might be, you know, parents, you know, have lovers, etc. But living your life, you can still incorporate a lot of these yogic wisdoms and yogic traditions. Mm-hmm. So worth doing. So the goal is, to my point, was to do away with if you can't do away with those attachments. I know in my life, I can speak for myself, when I was constantly seeking, you know, whatever, a better job, more money, a better car, whatever what was kind of grabbing you and pulling you in, you were never satisfied. Mm-hmm. You were never satisfied, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that's, let's see if I can... quote one of my most favorite philosophers of all time, Bruce Springsteen, right? I think he said, poor man want to be rich, rich man want to be king, and a king ain't satisfied till he has everything.
Wow.
Yeah, that's actually a Bruce Springsteen lyric.
So
look it up.
That's good, though.
That's how I remember that. And that's true, because otherwise you're spending your whole life getting better, right? Mm-hmm. If I only had that $250,000 car, then people would love me, right? And then you get that $250,000 car, and all of a sudden, boy, if I only had that $300,000 car, they would love me more. Mm-hmm. And that's not what it's all about.
Yep.
You know,
it's an endless pit, an endless void of wants and desires. Yeah,
but we are householders, right, for the most part, and that's a term that's used for people who must live in this world, right? We also have to work with our hands, our minds, you know, to raise children, to have relationships. But that's all part of the life we're in, and that's the life, and we can still have that connection and that love and compassion for other folks, regardless of how we're living our life or how we choose to live our life. We can, I firmly believe, we can control that or strive to control that. Mm-hmm. And for me, it would make you a better person. It has made me a better person, at least from a perspective of me personally being more satisfied for the way I'm living my life, and it makes me more satisfied when I have an opportunity to help someone in however way I possibly can. So I know that was a long winded to say that's what yoga is to me, but I do love the asanas as well, because it keeps my back in shape. I still jog.
That's just secondary though, right?
Yeah, it's secondary. But I know in Kundalini Yoga, we have that we have the integrated approach, right? So it's your body, it's your mind, it's your breathing, it's your mental awareness. The yoga of awareness is what it's called. So that's one of the things I really love about the practices we do here. We call them kriyas, K-R-I-Y-A. The kriyas that we do here is they're always balanced, right? So you want to do some exercises to kind of get that beautiful life force, pranic energy in your body, the oxygen going and your blood going, and that's fantastic. But we also always have some kind of form of meditation, right? The idea of meditating on why we're doing things, maybe focusing on a certain aspect of quality that we want to be able to conquer or to try to achieve. So when you integrate all those things, it makes for a better experience and something that will last with you longer, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's my perspective.
And there's less suffering, right, essentially?
Yeah.
So it's all
hopefully.
About... Hopefully.
Hopefully. Hopefully. So we don't know, and that's kind of what I think that's maybe what kind of keeps our life exciting, right? Because we don't know what tomorrow is. We don't know what the next moment is, right? And if you talk to the scientists or whatever, they'll tell you there's only this moment. You know, everything else is in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And if you talk to other scientists, they'll try to convince you, too, that even this moment is really just a hologram as well. So so my point is you really don't know. So let's try to be the best we can in this moment, in this time. This existence, this time right now is the time for you to act. And if you think about that all day, you're not going to do it every moment, but it'll give you a perspective. It'll give you that basis.
Yeah. It'll give you the conscious perspective.
Beautiful.
That's the name of the podcast.
Oh, conscious perspective? Okay. Throw it there. It'll give you that conscious perspective. I love it.
Oh, that's
funny. Conscious perspective.
I think we could probably wrap it up at that,
okay,
honestly.
Very
that's
cool.
Great. I appreciate your time, appreciate your wisdom, and I appreciate anybody that watched and listened this long. This was this was an amazing talk. Other than that, do you have any last words?
Yeah, let me just go with a blessing that I always use. I try to pass on to others. So we always rub our hands in Kundalini Yoga and then just say, put our hands together and may everyone have peace. May everyone have wisdom. May everyone speak the truth. May everyone have love and compassion in their heart. Have the willpower, prosperity, and security to be the human being that we're meant to be. And in our tradition, we always end with a Sat Nam. So Sat Nam to my dear Sangha, to these beautiful folks, these beautiful souls who joined us today. And with all love, I send to you Sat Nam.
Sat Nam. Sat Nam.
Sat Nam.